This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and this is a particularly interesting time of the year. This is what's known as Half Halloween, because I'm broadcasting this just a little bit before May 31st, which is the six-month period before the next Halloween and 6 months after the last Halloween. So it's time to get ready for your Halloween festivities coming up. And we have then as a guest my partner in crime, who helps with several of my seances, or I help him. We are a good partnership together. I've got Jamie Salines. Hey there, Jamie.
Hey, Scott. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thanks. And you were the one who had first told me about this Half Halloween. So what is this, or how did you find out about it, or what's the deal?
Well, many years ago, actually, before I even got into the seances, I've always been into Halloween.
Oh, yeah. And,
yeah, so, you know, I decorate the house, you know.
Boy, do you. You scare all the kids in the neighborhood.
Oh, yeah. I used to go all out in the yard. The last couple of years, I've kind of taken a break. We've had some new neighbors and stuff, so, you know, that I've kind of toned it down for a little while.
Did they say something to you, or are they just, you're just thinking they think I'm weird, or what?
not really. It's just, you know, we have some new neighbors and everything, so I thought, you know, might just kind of,
you know, want to scare them away.
Just tone it down just for a little bit. I basically took a breather for a couple of years. I've been pretty busy, and it's a one man operation for me at the house. So, You know, it's a lot of work. So decided to take a little break, but I'll probably bring it back this year.
So you've been involved doing a lot of Halloween. I mean, actually, you don't even take shows on Halloween because you're home and scaring kids and handing out candy and stuff, I guess.
Yeah, typically that's what I did. I was pretty heavily into it, and like I started to talk about before before into the seances and everything else, I would go to Halloween parties, and there was this one bar club that had a Halloween party, and I thought, what is this? Well, we're halfway to Halloween. They went all out, decorated as if it were Halloween, and so we had a great time. And of course, being a Halloween enthusiast type person, had a great time with it. And again, this Saturday in Houston, there is a Halloween party. I don't want to promote the club, but there's a local big club, has a name with a color in it, not red, but blue. Maybe okay. It's at a house or something. I'm not sure. But they're having a big Halloween party. And that reminded me, hey, Scott and I need to get on the ball on this Halloween stuff.
And so do they actually dress up, and is it like a Halloween party, essentially, that you're referring to at the party?
This party that's going to be this Saturday, yes. You come in costume. They decorate all Halloween, and basically it sounds like the event that I used to go to in the past, you know, pre-seance stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so – again, kind of in a way, they're celebrating Half Halloween. But as far as what we're talking about, I guess, here really is preparing for 6 months from now, because there are a lot of things that are going to need to be done before we actually start doing seances or getting the show together or whatever. So,
yeah, absolutely. Just to catch the listeners up, Scott and I have been doing a seance in Houston for how many years now, Scott? It's been a long time.
6 or 8 years, something like that. Yeah.
It seems like forever, but it's we're approaching 6, 7, maybe 8 years. I don't know. I have to go back and look at our calendars and see how long we've been doing this. But you know, we do this at a small venue, and I've got some ideas. You know, so I've branched out, and I'm starting to do, or I have been doing private events. And at people's homes, those kind of things. But, you know, really where the plan is for this year is to be bigger, to go bigger and make it a little more monetarily beneficial for both of us.
Right. Now, in the past, just to kind of bring people up to date, they can go back into the archives and find the podcast that we did in which I shared a lecture that we did, a mini lecture for local magic club. And we had given the longer lecture at the Mindvention a few years ago, and then put together the Creating the Paranormal Experience lecture notes, which still is planned for the future to be expanded into a more full length book. But still we have the notes available. And in fact, I think that, if that's okay with you, we might even offer a couple of those PDFs as a prize, so people can enter a contest and we can draw some names and award a couple of those, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a gentleman, what was his name, Haberman?
Oh, Steve Haberman, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Steve just published a book, a really good book, and in the introduction he talks about attending our lecture and how we inspired him, and now he does this full effort with the seances and everything else. So I think this is really good fuel for thought and maybe encourages some people who are on the fence of thinking about, hey, right, could I do this? And maybe the lecture notes giveaway will help some people out and get them started with down the dark
exactly
path.
This is just another alternate stream of revenue, as I like to explain it, because these are times in which people are looking for opportunities to see where they can make some money, because perhaps they're not doing as many shows as they were before, they're having to take a lesser fee or whatever it happens to be. So what can we do in order to use the skills we already have to expand into some areas where we might be comfortable? And some people may not be so comfortable about doing seances because they haven't done them before, nor know how to go about creating that paranormal experience. Certainly there are a lot of books out there that will teach you ideas about how to tell bizarre stories or to how to put some sort of spooky presentation around a traditional magic trick. But what we were talking about in this lecture notes and in that mini lecture that we gave, again, that's back in the archives you can find in a podcast, was really more of how to market that. That is, how to find the venue, how to sell tickets, how to put butts in the seats, essentially, and how you should present yourself, of whether it's going to be as a psychic, as a ghost hunter or whatever. So there are, and what kind of audience that you should have and everything then too. So there are a lot of things that we discussed there, and I don't know that we need to necessarily repave that road, but you had touched on something there, Jamie, about doing in-home parties. Now, again, just for people who haven't heard that all, that previous podcast already, that the thing that we were doing was at a local bar that's downtown that is something of historic value that was built back in 1847. And this was a going concern. It was an old bar that Sam Houston used to drink in. There were local ladies of the evening, and it has a historic past but also a haunted past. And so we try to raise the spirits, no pun intended, but people are invited, of course, to bring the drinks from downstairs where we have the seance upstairs. And the way that we present that is that downstairs I will do a little bit of meet and greet and doing some things with a spooky kind of a bizarre twist, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then invite people then at the top of the hour to come upstairs, and that's when we take their money and they're seated, and they could and then I introduce Jamie, talk a little bit about the history of the place, and then Jamie actually conducts the seance. So that's kind of the structure that we have and the location that we have partnered with this bar in downtown Houston. So there are other places that are available, and what you and I are talking about now is expanding this to a larger format, plus maybe even going smaller. In other words, going larger and smaller, so larger to a theater that might seat more people, but then also going smaller from the standpoint of bringing it into people's homes. Because I know that you said some people have asked you about in the past, Jamie, about how that you could, or if this is something that you can present in someone's home.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the concerns, or the very first time I did this, this is kind of an interesting story, but basically it was a swingers group. I didn't know it at the time, but I ended up doing basically the paranormal experience in their home. It was a Halloween themed party, and it was a fun group, and it was pretty interesting, we'll just say. But I'm sure there was different kind of activities after I left. But
they probably weren't all necessarily just discussing what you had done.
I there might have been some bed sheets involved, but I don't think they were involving ghosts.
So with
we'll
ghosts,
just put it that way. Yes, I know it's a family show.
Yeah.
So we'll just leave it at that point. Yeah. But it was a very fun group. That was my first experience of taking it on the road, doing it in someone's home. And since then, I've done quite a bit of those. The biggest, I guess, potential market is women's groups. John Stetson, we all know John, Is capitalizes on doing a psychic ladies only party, and I'm starting to get quite a number of these ladies groups to do the paranormal experiences, and that's worked out really well monetarily. And you know, I'm able to take my props and able to do the spooky, you know, spooky type show in their living room, you know, at their location, and then bring all the props back home with me, of course, and you know, the haunted artifacts.
Right.
So, yeah, monetarily, that's been a big boost as far as the business side of it. That's kind of what we wanted to talk about.
Right. Just touching on that, by the way, when you say bringing things in and then back out, I think that that's one of the things, again, we discussed in our notes and on their lecture before, and that is that when you are going to go into someone's home, you need to make sure that they don't believe that you have left some spirits behind, because you want to make sure the place is cleansed, so to speak. I'm using air quotes here. So that way that whenever you leave, if something happens, something falls over and breaks, or, you know, after you have left, and they're going to say, hey, we've still got spirits, you need to come back and do an exorcism in our house or something. So whatever right. you bring in, you need to make sure that they feel comfortable that you have taken everything back out of their house.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, of course, part of it, part of the hype is having them sign the waiver, which does state that if I leave and their house becomes possessed or haunted, that you know, basically I'm not liable for those kind of things. Although, you know, we do perform a ritual, a cleansing ritual at the end. Mm-hmm. There is some rituals done at the beginning as well to protect from evil spirits. And then we try to contact evil spirits, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
Right. Contradicts the whole thing. But, you know, that whole setup falls into setting the mood and setting the atmosphere when you're in somebody's multi-million-dollar home and it's all nice and everything looks great. And now you're trying to make things spooky. So you've got to use all avenues to create that air.
Mm-hmm. I think also one of the things that you do is to bring something in, particularly, again, we discussed this before, of having a ventriloquist figure. So you bring in something, and in other words, you're saying that whatever it is you are, this artifact is infused with a spirit of this dead boy who wanted to be a vet and died a tragic death or something when he was young, or that there is a dagger that was owned by somebody as a serial killer. Whatever it is that you're bringing in, you're also taking out, so you're not leaving that. So in other words, you're carrying the spirit with you as opposed to summoning spirits.
Right, absolutely. And so that's what I've worked out. And usually most of the groups that I do it, I don't really sell it as a seance. I sell it as a paranormal experience.
Mm-hmm. Big difference.
I found the word paranormal makes it a little more intriguing, like the ghost hunter type shows I see on television. And I think they're bringing it back, or at least I saw some reruns of the guy who the ghost, the haunted collector.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's reruns or if they're bringing that show back, but it's kind of that premise. You're bringing in haunted artifacts and I'm taking them with me, so the spirits, you know, return back with me as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that it's, again, important if you're going to be going into someone's home that they feel that way too, as opposed to, let's say, like, again, the venue we've been using downtown, Jamie, for the last several years, is someplace that is haunted. And so people can go there and they leave there and they feel like whenever they're leaving that there aren't any spirits that are following them home. And again, I guess, like you say, that we had them sign a waiver. So this way that even if they feel like they did bring something home or tagged along with them in the car, that, that they want to later say that we had caused, well, they've signed a waiver that says that we're not responsible for what it's worth.
Right. Right. No, absolutely. And this year what we're marketing differently is, you know, we're still going to do, you know, pursue the Le Carafe. That's been our bread and butter for the mm-hmm. seances, the paranormal shows. That's worked out for us really well.
And it helps them too, because it's on their off nights.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you, you know, I hate to keep referring back to the previous episode, but there's a lot of information there about how we do it, how we found the venue, all that kind of stuff. And that's in our lecture notes as well. You know, like I said, we'll be giving those away. So, you know, a couple of lucky people, you know, will be able to jump on that and find out that more detailed information. But what we're going to focus on this year is, now that we've learned quite a bit in the last 6 to 8 years that we've been doing this, is how do we make more money out of this? You know, how do we go bigger?
Yeah, I think we could still charge the same amount, but then just have a larger group. The problem that we've had with the existing location is the limitation, of course, of space. And when we reach 27 people, it's more than full. 30 is way too many. So if we have a dozen or so, it's great. It's intimate, but you know, you can't charge people $50, at least in our economy here, for that kind of experience and get that number of people. And so therefore that's why we charge the $20, and then we have to pay the venue part of that then as well. Whereas I think the idea that you got is to have a little bit larger space, and then we can charge more for people who are going to be at the table, and then a regular general admission fee for those who are seated in the audience. Isn't that kind of what you have in mind?
Right, absolutely. There's a theater opening up near my home, 15 minute drive from where I live, 30 minutes outside of downtown Houston. Basically, it's a suburb of Houston, and there's these theaters all over the United States.
They're, right.
You know, the small theater companies. This theater's brand new. They will be having their grand opening this summer. They seat 125 people, tiered seating. There's a proscenium. There's no front curtain. It's basically a small local theater. But I thought, you know, we could, even at 125 seats, it's not that far from the stage. We could have a group of people on the stage, and that would be considered the inner circle, the people that participate. We can charge them more money. And then the spectators, viewers, can sit in the tiered seating, and they would basically watch all the proceedings and be able to see everything. And basically, we would keep the same format, but just do it in a theater, larger group, like an hour and 15, 20-minute presentation, and maybe do one or two per evening during the Halloween season.
And then is there an outdoor area, or I should say in the lobby area, where they could serve drinks so that there could be some pre-activity of meet and greet?
Right, absolutely. So you get that buzz going with the bizarre magic ahead of time, and we would do the history. You know, the popular themed paranormal shows that have been going really well for me have been the Jack the Ripper themed mm-hmm. shows. And what we've done to tie that in is one of the main suspects of being Jack the Ripper, James Kelly, traveled to the United States. And one of the destinations was Galveston, Texas. And so what Scott and I have kind of woven together is it is quite possible that James traveled through this area to go to Galveston. And since La Carafe was in business during that time as a bar, that it's possible that Jack himself drank beer in this establishment that we're in. So that gives a nice tie-in. And I think we could still do that the same with the suburb of just using the locale possibility that James Kelly traveled through this area.
Right, right. I think so. And to get that idea of using Jack the Ripper to begin with, wasn't it a group, I can't remember who that you had used before, where you got the idea? I want to say it was the English group. What are they called? Outlaw FX or something?
Are you talking about the Lebanon Circle?
The Lebanon.
Yeah, they put on an effect called From Hell.
That's it.
And it's great, great routine. So, you know, we don't make any commission off of that. I mean, but it basically is an out to lunch with a Jack the Ripper theme.
Mm-hmm.
Not out to lunch, out of this world.
Out of this world, yeah.
Yeah, out of this world themed effect, but with a Jack the Ripper tie-in. It's done fantastically well. The props that you're supplied with look fantastic. And that's really what got us started into the Jack
right.
the Ripper theme.
Right. And that was what I was just going to suggest then to anyone else who might want to do a little bit of research and find out about that. That might get you interested also, because it seems that there is always an interest in Jack the Ripper, and particularly around Halloween, that you could play on that certainly. And if you get that effect from Lebanon Circle, then that might inspire you to do other effects and use Jack the Ripper as a theme. Again, it plays well for us in our area because that we can have that tie-in to have some sort of a believability in saying, yeah, that apparently that one of his people was killed in Galveston, and one of his victims, I should say.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so in the bar where we are, just as you said, Jamie, not only was a popular watering hole in a major area in the South here, but also some ladies of the evening had plied their trade. And of course, that was what he was known for, is for mutilating prostitutes. And so there were some who had worked in this haunted bar where we work. And so it's kind of a natural leap, I guess, of the imagination to think that it's feasible, you know. And right. And when other things start happening, then that makes everything more believable.
Oh, absolutely. And by using the artifacts, such as the photographs from the Lebanon Circle props, you know, they become artifacts. And, mm-hmm. you know, a simple telekinetic timber, which I've scorched, becomes a piece of wood taken from Colley Hatch, the insane asylum in Essex County, where two of the known suspects for Jack the Ripper were housed, and there was a fire there. So this piece of timber is from the facility. You know, that's the story and the tie-in and everything. So you can weave a pretty interesting storyline around, you know, the effects and the props that you'll end up using.
Right. And there again, that is something that you can bring into your seance, whether it's going to be in a home or in a theater or in a bar or restaurant or something. So, again, just trying to, again, kind of like with you, I hate to keep referring back to the other podcast where we had spoken so much more and also to the lecture notes, but essentially, yes, trying to find the right venue where you can go and do a seance and partner with someone so that they kind of are invested in your success as well.
Right. No, absolutely. And and Lee Earle, I believe, is taking his seance on a countrywide tour.
Yeah, Manifestations. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so he's revived that. And there aren't too many of those type of shows going around, but it's a lot of fun. You know, both Scott and I can tell you that we've had a lot of fun doing it.
More fun than money.
well, we make okay money as far as what we're doing. But the way I look, see it as we got paid to learn.
Sure did.
And now that we've done a very good job of it, we know what works and, more importantly, what does not work. Mm-hmm. Now we're able to take that to the private homes and where there is more money to be made.
Right.
And now moving it to a small theater, you know, where somebody like Todd Robbins was doing his Play Dead in a nice size theater in New York, you know, a paranormal themed show. So there is possibility. There's a lot of possibility for making more money at it, of course.
Yeah, definitely so. And it's just trying to find your own little niche. And you have 6 months between now and Halloween to start working on that. And so I think it's important that you, I guess like anything, first of all, you have to have a show. You have to have an act. You have to have a performance, something you want to put together, and then try and market it. You don't want to do the other way around, because you might be surprised how quickly that you might get booked to do something. And it's like, ooh, gosh, what am I going to do? So you got to make sure that you've got something. Again, it's kind of like any other magic that you're going to need to practice and perform a little bit at a time. And then once you put those things together into an act, then you go out and sell the act. And the same thing here, that those are some small effects that you can do. And how can I weave this into something that has a thread or a commonality from one thing to the next that will build into, I guess, an act, a seance act, basically. And again, it's important to know kind of what you want to be, as to whether that you want to be a psychic or you're going to be a ghost hunter or whatever. The problem with being a psychic, I think, is that the problem is afterwards people are going to be asking you questions about their long lost loved ones or something that they may have lost, even of saying, hey, that I lost my wedding ring. We have any idea where that might be or whatever, because they think, well, you've proven you can do this, and so you should be able to do that and predict the future, or tell me whether I should be buying a new car, or do I need to leave this job, or should I get a divorce or whatever. Now, that's something else entirely different that you can bring to the party, quite literally, to a home party, that you're talking about the not only the paranormal experience, but also doing psychic parties.
Well, absolutely. And what I've done, several years ago, I attended a lecture by Paul Draper. Paul's a great friend, real good guy, and he has this system for doing readings that are non-psychic. And so I took those readings, and you know, we've talked about it. I've ran with it. I've customized it for my own use, and I've had a lot of success with it. and it's gone over really, really well. And so these home parties, what I do is I arrive early and I do the readings for people prior to the paranormal show. We do the paranormal experience, and then I do readings for people afterwards. So it makes it a full evening of not only watching a show, having some wine and, you know, desserts or whatever their evening entails, but also adding that customized individual, you know, entertainment with each person. And so that's made it a big value for them, and monetarily it's worked out really well.
Now, when you're saying that you're going to give a reading for each person, and let's say it's a small party of 20 people, even if you're spending 5 or 10 minutes with each one, which is not very much time, that takes up a lot of time right there.
Right, absolutely. You know, take 20 people, if you do 10 minutes a person, you know, that's up real quick. So that's why you're there for several hours and providing that type of entertainment. In the individual readings for each person. Mm-hmm. You know, I offer that as an added, addition to the show, you know, of course at an added expense as well.
When you do that, do you, charge by the hour or by the person?
I pretty much, what I like to do is if I were having the party myself, I want to know how much is this going to cost me total.
Right.
So I just estimate how many people, and I tell them every single person will get a reading, and I'll do the paranormal experience. So they get a reading. I'll do half of them before the performance. We'll do the paranormal experience, and then I'll do readings for those that have not gotten the readings yet. You know, of course, I do working with the host, we prioritize for who has to leave early kind of thing, and I'll do their readings first. And usually I'll spend between 5 to 10 minutes max per person, depending on how much time the event is.
It's still going to take about 3 hours for 20 people.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So by breaking that up and doing an hour and a half to begin with, an hour and a half on the back end, then doing 45 minutes to an hour of a seance, it does make for a pretty, pretty long and full evening.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a full evening. And fortunately for the attendees, they're only experiencing about an hour and a half total of that time, because the other part of the evening is spent mingling with the other guests, and you know, you're socializing, having some wine, loosening up for the reading. So it makes it a lot easier for me.
You know, whenever that I have seen, like on the boardwalk or some psychic fairs or different places where there are psychics that have their shield out or something, it says palm readings for $5 or something. I haven't ever gone and done that, so I don't know how long that takes, but I wouldn't think that they would take too much of their time for $5. They might say, well, for this premium package, we can tell you more information or get you to come back on a more regular basis or something. But I was just going to say, for what you're charging, it's got to be much more than $5 or $10 per reading per person. So if you're going to be having 20 people, you know, at even $10, you know, $200 is not very much at all for the 3 hours you're going to be taking. So I would think that if you're looking at that as a total amount as opposed to per person, that sounds better to the person you're selling the show to. In other words, if you say, well, it's going to be $600 as opposed to saying it's going to be, you know, $30 per person or whatever, because they might think, well, how about if we just do 10 readings? You know, so it's probably best that you do an all-end pricing for the whole evening.
Yeah, I just do an all-inclusive fee. I mean, it's simple to say, hey, for the whole evening, it's $1,200, includes reading for everyone up to X number of people, and then mm-hmm. the hour and a half, you know, seance, paranormal show, however you're marketing it. Mm-hmm. And, of course, these prices are going to depend on the market and what area you're in, you know, what part of the country you live in.
Sure. Well, part of the advantage of that also is that you don't have much to take in and out, as opposed to the larger things whenever you're doing a larger magic show. You, with this, you know, depending upon what kind of reading that you're doing, if it's just something like you do, it's written on paper. Some people will read colors or rocks or cards or numbers or whatever. So there's not a lot necessarily to carry there. And the only real thing you're carrying are the things for the seance. And like what you and I do with the La Carafe at the bar downtown, really the big stuff is probably the sound system that you carry. And I think that's kind of important to have the music in the background. So my question on that is, do you in the home parties carry in that music to kind of play and add, in the background and add to the theme?
I do, absolutely. I use a Bluetooth little sound system that I carry with me, a little Bluetooth speaker these small speakers are pretty incredible now. You can get some great sound for very, very low cost and mm-hmm. using my phone to stream the music. And so I set the atmosphere with that. And I also use it during the performances, you know, that as background music. There's no microphone needed when I've got 40, 50, 60 sure. Ladies in a house, you know, surrounded in a living room and, you know, that type of environment. And it works out really, really well. So I basically travel with one large case. It holds my Ouija board, various props, you know, and everything. And the readings that I do, that I provide them with a printout or a handwritten notes on a printed form that they get to take home. They can share their analysis with others, and that way they have it. And, of course, it has all my contact information. So that was how I adjusted it from what Paul's original reading system is. And by the way, Paul and I will be partnering later on this year to record some video of that and put it together in a package. So we'll make that available later on. Probably my guess is will be early next year, 2017, when that'll be available, because Paul travels quite a bit and it's hard for the two of us to get together, you know, and find a central location. I think right now we're probably going to meet up in New Orleans to collaborate and put that product together.
That's a great place to do that too, because that's a voodoo city.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
A lot of little spooky places to go and maybe record something there and actually show some people and do it in real time then too. Well, as far as other ideas.
I do have another thought. Sorry to interrupt you there, but I wanted to get this out before I lose my train of thought. But Paul Draper he works at a huge haunted house attraction, and he does a lot of work for them. In fact, recently there was an interview of him on the Travel Channel about this place, and I'm trying to remember where it was. It was
somewhere in Utah?
I think so, but it's like an old industrial building. They've turned it into the like scare factory or monster factory. Anyway, it's pretty amazing setup, but that's a lot of potential there, because here in Houston, fourth largest city, about to become third largest city, mm-hmm. there are haunted attractions all over.
Yeah,
and even in the suburb where I live in, there's two or three, and that's a much smaller area. Those are potential places for you to do bizarre magic or even set up a small little performance area or something and partner with those type of events where you have people waiting in line for hours to go to these attractions.
Well, that's an excellent idea, because you could perhaps make some extra money that way. It's just like whenever that we're working for a corporate event and they're having a buffet, that you just kind of work the line because people are standing there just killing time, and they are may as well entertain them right there. So I think that people are waiting to get into the haunted house, that would help to add to the experience beforehand by just doing some things before they go in. Now, in that case, would you be suggesting that they work with the sponsor or whoever is the organizer of the thing for them to pay you on an hourly basis, as opposed to, let's say, working for tips in the line, or what?
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's going to depend on you and your experience and what you're comfortable with. But me personally, I would try to work out an hourly wage and then not hustle tips, but accept tips, you know, because typically we're looking at 18-year-old, probably right. average age, and they're not a high tipping crowd, but they are going to become restless waiting in line to get in. So that's your selling opportunity of doing the Disney plan of, you know, you go to Disney and you're waiting in line to get in the latest attraction, and it's maybe an hour wait, but you're zigzagging through this line and you're looking at video monitors, you're looking at other stuff, and next thing you know, oh, I'm in the front, and it doesn't feel like I waited an hour to get into this attraction.
Right.
And that's kind of the idea of the selling point that you could do for those of you out there for working the haunted attractions.
Well, one of the things about restaurants also that you can always pitch the owner is to say that you can help make the wait seem to disappear, because while people are waiting for 45 minutes or a half hour to be seated, that you could be entertaining in the lobby certainly during those high volume times, as opposed to people saying, 45 minutes, I'm going to go to the next restaurant. But if they have something to do or they say, what's this guy doing? You know, they're going to stop and watch. And the same thing here is that they're not necessarily going to go to another attraction necessarily, but they might. In other words, it's like, hey, we're going to try and catch two or three of these tonight, different spook houses. And if this line is an hour, then I might just come back later. So you want to try to keep them there because they may not come back later. So that'd be another way of trying to pitch this when you're talking with the organizer.
Right, absolutely. And because, you know, we're in May right now, this is the perfect time to start marketing. In fact, you should be in panic mode right now of urgency to start working on that if that's what you want to pursue. So there's a lot of opportunities, but now is the time you definitely need to start pursuing them.
It's easy to find them, certainly with the internet, of just trying to Google spook houses, fun houses, haunted houses, whatever that is in your area. And even though that there is nothing being promoted right now, that you can find something for last year. And once you identify that website, then you can find the contact information and get to them.
Right, absolutely. And what we do, actually, Scott and I, what we do is we have our personal websites separate from the seance work. We have the Houston Seance website.
HoustonSeance.com, in case anybody wants to look at that.
Right, so which reminds me, I need to update it, so I'll go ahead and take a look there. There may be some old dates and stuff on there. But anyway, so that is totally separate from our professional full-time magic careers, or rather what our full-time focus is. So we keep them separate. I also personally have paranormalexperience.org. So that one has been very useful for me as well, keeping everything separate. But I do want to remind everyone, you do need to do a little research. You do need to become the expert on paranormal type activities. I routinely get calls saying my house is haunted, demons are attacking me. What do you think of this photograph? Are these orbs? Are these ghosts? So I regularly get contact from those type of people. So just be prepared on how to handle that as well.
Well, that's a very good point, too, that particularly if you're in a smaller metropolitan area and you get to be a big fish in a small pond, then you will be getting a lot of people coming out of the walls and asking you these kinds of questions. And so, yeah, be prepared to be the resident expert because there aren't many people doing what you're going to be doing.
Right, absolutely. And I'm pursuing it more on the ghost hunter end of it, the paranormal investigator. In fact, you and I will tell your listeners there that you and I have actually gone on ghost hunts. And,
right.
I've attended one real seance, and it was very interesting. You know,
but that we did down in Galveston.
Yes. Yeah. You have to go down and do that research and actually when in Rome. You know, you have to do like the ghost investigators do. So we've gone on ghost hunts ourselves.
Well, that's a good suggestion. I hadn't even I forgot to mention that. And I think for those who might be a little bit reluctant or saying, I don't know what this is all about or whether I want to do it or not, there are probably some resources online or some videos that you can watch of some seances that have been recorded. I don't know, but I'm assuming there must be something on YouTube. Everything else is out there. But if they do have an opportunity to ever see something that's going to be live, then they should go and see that. Now, the problem with that is that kind of like we do our seances during the month of October, that there may not be anything available in or around your immediate area until we get into the scary season, basically. And then it's really too late because you're going to say, oh, now I got an idea what that's like. But we're just saying that when the opportunity affords itself, that you should go and do this. Now, let me also say, Jamie, like we did with the ghost hunt, which I had published that, I think, also. If you go through the archives, you can find that when we went to the Ott Hotel, the OTT Hotel, down in Liberty, Texas, that those kinds of things are kind of ongoing throughout the year. And I think if you look up again on Google for some sort of a ghost hunter in your area or a paranormal experience or something, there may be these types of opportunities in which they invite you to come along with them as they go ghost hunting, because just as you said, throughout the year, people will contact us to say, I have this problem, or I need an exorcist, or what do you recommend about this or that? Well, they will more than likely contact those organizations, those traditional ghost hunter groups, if you will. And so they will sometimes be able to offer a tour or a trip, if you will, to where they're going to be going to help investigate because they need some more people to run wires or whatever else, and you get to spend the night with them. So I'm just saying that check out your area. It's possible that there might be an opportunity for you to hear and see how they work, and then you can use those same kinds of tools or at least some of the shop talk and some of the other things. You need to know about the instruments and whatnot they use, because when you're presenting yourself as an authority, you need to know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you know, there's a real good website to go to. It's called meetup.com, M as in Mary, EETUP.com. And if you log in there, you create an account, you put in your location. Here in Houston, there's at least 10 or 15 ghost hunter groups. And so you can find one in your area. You can attend meetings. You can attend ghost hunts with them. But another opportunity, if you wanted to start now, and this is something I started early on before we even did our seance together at LaGraff, I partnered with a ghost walk, and I provided a 15 to 20 minute spooky magic show in the middle of their ghost walk. They would stop at one location. I did about 20 minutes of bizarre magic. Everybody had a great time. And what they did was on that particular tour, they just added an extra charge per person, and that was the deluxe ghost walk. So you had two options. You can take the regular ghost walk or the deluxe ghost walk with the added entertainment and the stop at the restaurant. And so that's what I did. Mm-hmm. So that's still yet another opportunity that you can start doing right now.
Well, that is a good idea. I'd forgotten about that as well. I remember, didn't she have like an Indian guide or someone that was a spirit that led this lady on the ghost walk?
Yeah. This lady communicated with her spirit guide was some kind of Indian spirit, and mm-hmm. she was pretty heavily into this, you know, and so you will meet all kinds of interesting people.
Yeah, certainly will. Well, that's a good idea, and I'd forgotten about that meetup group. Certainly, you might find something in or around your area, and it's worth traveling over and maybe attending a meeting or two and seeing what's up and how this all works. And that's something that you can do right away because, yeah, they do ghost hunts, if you will, year-round, because obviously if somebody thinks their place is haunted, it's not just haunted during the month of October or around Halloween.
Yeah, absolutely. And if anybody has any questions or anything, I mean, they're welcome to contact me. You know, I'll be more than happy to help them out. You know, I'm on Facebook and email, and I'm pretty available to get in touch with. So you can find me on Google pretty easily, and I'll be more than happy to tell you my experiences or help you out if you have any questions.
Well, any other ideas or suggestions, Jamie, that you've got for the folks that now it's the half Halloween point?
I think the thing is just like Mr. Haberman, just go out there and start doing it, you know, get your feet wet and get excited and not just talk about it and actually go out and take some action. Go back to look at the or listen to the previous archive where you and I talked about it with more detail about the meat of it. And then just go out and do it. You got to go out and do some action.
Right. Yeah. You're not going to accomplish anything until you actually get up off the couch or get away from the computer.
Right. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
And plus, the way I looked at it is we made real good money at having fun and learning. Mm-hmm. And it's grown, and each and every year it gets better and easier, and it just works out really, really well. And I've met a lot of interesting, fun people.
And we've gotten some good publicity, been on television and the newspapers and everything then, too. And, of course, all that helps and generates more butts being put in the seats.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, good. Jamie, thank you very much. Appreciate you being with us today.
All right. Well, happy Halloween.
And the same to you, my friend. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Jamie Salinas. This is Scotty out. Well, I want to thank Jamie for being my guest here on the Magic Word Podcast. He is a very busy magician around town, performing at corporate events as well as doing a lot of birthday parties on the weekends and a lot of other activities that he's involved in the magic community and elsewhere with his regular full-time job. He is a part-time professional and a darn good one as well, and one of the better magicians in and around the Houston area. Highly recommend him for a lot of things, and we have been partners for a long time working with the seance, as we were just talking, and also some years back we were partners with Top Talent Productions, in which that we were booking magicians downtown at a local hotel. Anyhow, getting off track over here, but again, I want to thank Jamie very much for being a guest and for talking about Half-Oween or Half-Halloween. And one of the things that we talked about was offering Creating the Paranormal Experience, which is a copy of our lecture notes that is available at the Magic Store here on the Magic Word Podcast that you can buy independently. But here's your chance to actually get a free copy of our PDF. And if you'll just go to themagicwordpodcast.com, scroll to the bottom of this podcast blog, and you will see an entry form there, which will be up for a few weeks, or perhaps just this one week, I guess. So if you listen to this in the archives, it probably won't be there, because this is just going to be available for a moment in time, as are all of our other contests that we have as well. So we do put them up and then take them down, so this way that people don't feel like they can still register when the contest is actually over. So enough of that. You know what to do. Just scroll to the bottom and fill in the form, and good luck. And this is available to anyone, anywhere in the entire world, because it is a PDF that we can shoot you an email and the PDF will be attached. So enter the contest and good luck. And now it's time for our weekly review of a few magic products that are out here on the market today. Before I get started, I would like to ask you, the listener, if these are helpful for you. I haven't gotten back any response necessarily if you are enjoying them or not, or if this is something you think that should be part of this podcast, or I should just eliminate this and just stick with the conversations that I have with magicians only. So I would like to hear your feedback on these reviews, if they are helpful or not, should I keep them or not. I would like to hear your thoughts on this, and you can write me at scott@themagicwordpodcast.com, or you can post something to me through Facebook or Twitter or many other ways of trying to contact me, but I would like to hear your thoughts on this. But the products that we're going to be talking about this week are going to be three different things. Two of them are download videos, and one is a PDF file that you can read. We'll start this week with a PDF download that you can read, which is called Safe Bet by Pablo Amira. This is basically a three-way out using an equivoque type of method in order to get the right answer. However, this is really a study in equivoque. It goes into a lot of detail, gives a lot of credits to people who have contributed towards this effect, but basically that you're going to be having a spectator to use an invisible deck in their mind or on the table or in their hand or whatever to select a card, and that you have a wallet which is out to begin with, saying that there is something interesting in here which we are going to show later. So whenever that they do come down to whichever card that has been equivocated, it is inside of your wallet. Okay, that's the basic effect. You might be thinking, well, that's okay. I already know a good equivoque and how to force something that will be an ultimate prediction, and I can put something in my wallet in order to make this outcome be successful. Yes, you can. But again, what you're paying for here with this PDF is really the instructions for how to do a successful equivoque. There are a lot of little nuances and things that need to be studied. This is not something that you will read one time and get. You need to go back and take a look at it. There are a lot of interesting little nuances and wordings that are inspired by Kenton Nepper and Doc Hilford and David Berglas and Max Maven and on and on. So many people's input has been thought about over a long period of time to get to this. So I think it's an interesting study and something that should be added to your library,
particularly your PDF library, I guess your digital library, that has to do with an equivoque. Very interesting study. I will say, because that his first language is not English, there are some English problems in the translation, but that's not going to be a hindrance. You'll understand what I mean. For example, he might say choose instead of the word chose, or a few things like that that are not necessarily just typos, but that's a minor thing. I still think that this is something that would be of value to you. And so, again, I would recommend this, and it's called Safe Bet by Pablo Amira. Next up is the first of two videos that I want to review, and this is called RE5, that's capital R, small e, and then the number 5 by Kelvin Trinh. I probably mispronounced his name, T-R-I-N-H. This video is only an explanation and not a performance. And there is only music, so there is a few written instructions that come in as subtitles. So you can learn this just by watching it, and he gives pretty good instructions on how to do it. But he does not do the effect, does not perform this, so you don't see this actual performance in play here. So you really don't know what's happening until you kind of get into it and say, oh, well, that's what it is. So let me explain. The effect, as I understand it, is that you can essentially have a card selected, and then after a couple of shuffles, you can strip out that card. And you can do it, it has a couple of bonus effects where you can strip out all four aces, or you can strip out one which is upside down, and you just give the deck a toss, and it looks like you just pull the card somewhere out of the middle. It is a clever idea, also using some older methods, or a combination of a couple of older methods, one of which is a little knacky and will take a little bit of time, and I'd say is not necessarily for the beginner card magician. It is not something that I think that I would do. There are a lot of other ways of trying to locate a card, but it is a little bit different, in which you actually would strip out a card just as if it was a stripper deck. This is not using a stripper deck. It is using just a regular deck. It's just a matter of the sleights that he teaches you on how to maneuver the cards to where they need to be, and then how to maneuver the card in the right position in order to pull that card out so it looks like it's coming out of the middle of the deck, basically. So not real wild about it. It's an okay video and an okay effect. Again, I would like to have seen this performed to see what an audience reaction would be to something like this. If you're going to be performing this effect, I believe it's best placed someplace, let's say like in an ambitious card routine or something, where you are producing the card all the time. Instead of being on the top of the deck, you can actually find it from the middle of the deck or something like that. There are different places you can put it, but let me say this is not a standalone effect, in my opinion. I think this is something that could be done in conjunction with other kinds of things in a trick, or rather in a whole routine. It is, again, okay. I don't know that I'm going to spend a lot of time working on it and probably won't use it, but I think that for some of you, you might like it. And so, again, this is called RE5 by Kelvin Trinh. Our final product to be reviewed this week is called Titanic by Zolo. That's Z or Z O L O. And again, Titanic, that's capital T, small I, capital T, Anik, Titanic. Not sure exactly what that means, but let me say first off that the quality of this video is horrible. It looks like that it was filmed in his living room or kitchen or somewhere in his house, and the background noise and people talking or children or whatever, I found it a little bit distracting. Looks like it was filmed perhaps on a camera from the telephone or something. So quality is less than bad. It is horrible, in my opinion. But again, a lot of times when you're downloading something and you're wanting to learn the effect, you really don't care necessarily about the quality of the video. It doesn't have to be high quality, and if the effect is really strong and the method is sound. And let me say, in both these cases, that's not necessarily the case either. So I just didn't care for this much at all. This is something that, although he's speaking English, English is not his first language either. But the gimmick itself, it's something that anybody can make. I think your six-year-old child can make something like this. It is quite easy. So it's basically just the handling of the gimmick after he teaches you how to make, didn't even show you how to make the gimmick. He just holds it up, which is part of the issue then as well. There are really no close-ups. There are really just shots that are from a distance, either a one-shot or a two-shot, where that you have people in the camera. So he does show a couple of performances with a friend who is there to show what it would look like, but it's not like a real person, so you really don't get to see a genuine reaction or anything. He gives you a few ideas on what you can do with this gimmick. Let me explain the gimmick, I guess, not what it is, but the effect of it. But it's a ring that you will show on your hand, and you hold your hand up as if that you are a traffic cop or something, holding your hand out saying stop or whatever, so they can see the ring on your finger. And then you turn your hand over, show the back of your hand, and the ring is still on your finger. And whenever that you would throw it at a card or whatever, just putting it away, it's gone. Suddenly the ring is off your finger, and now that it looks like it is on the card or on a piece of paper, there again are some variety of things in which he can teach how that you can use this for an effect, none of which I think are anything that I would necessarily use, but you might. It's not an expensive download, and it might be something that some of you like. It's just not one that I would recommend at all, but for a variety of reasons. But again, perhaps if it would have been a better quality video, if it would have been something with some close-ups and showing the detail on the construction of the gimmick, which, again, I don't think you necessarily need to have the close-up. You kind of get the idea, but I would like to have seen that. Perhaps it might have been a little bit better, and also having shown that in performance with a real audience. But again, not overall really wild about that. And this one is called Titanic by Solo. Well, that wraps up the review of a trio of tricks here on the Magic Word Podcast. These tricks are available as downloads on the Magic Shop we have. If you'll just go over to the tab on the side where it says Magic Store, and then you can see what kinds of things we still have in the store from previous weeks that we have reviewed here, and things that are available from Murphy's Magic Supplies. You can also buy them at your local brick-and-mortar shop, which I highly recommend that you patronize to keep these guys in business. And also, again, I would implore you to give me your feedback if you want me to continue with these reviews, or if they should be less frequent, let's say doing them once a month and maybe more reviews, or maybe just have a separate podcast, which would be just for trick reviews only, or whether that we should eliminate these. You tell me. Again, I want to listen to you, the listener, to have your input and to give you what you want. Well, I think that's going to do it for us for this week. We have a lot of really interesting guests that are going to be coming up in upcoming weeks here on the Magic Word Podcast. And just to give you a tip on one who will be coming up very soon, perhaps even this next week, will be Richard Osterlin. He will be one of the featured performers at the 2016 East Coast Mind Jam. And, of course, that will be taking place from June 24th through the 26th in Somerset, New Jersey. This is going to be less than a month away, and it's going to be fantastic. Again, Richard Osterlin will be there, and he'll also be giving an extra event, which will be his workshop on Monday. And prior to that, that Alain New is going to be giving his workshop on a Friday. Two of them will both be featured performers and lecturers at the East Coast Mind Jam. Also Mark Salem. It'll include Eric Dittleman, Lee Earle, and Christopher Taylor, and Devin Knight, and myself. So I think it's going to be a pretty good convention as far as the talents line up. Let me say, as far as size goes, that this is usually kind of an intimate thing. The registration is not limited, so any and all who are interested are invited, and it's up in the Northeast Corridor, and so it's, I think, should be able to draw from a lot of people up there. So I'm pretty excited. This should be a pretty good convention. This is the second time that Eric Citron has put this on, so that'll be pretty exciting. Anyhow, Richard is going to be coming up as our guest. That will be this next week. So, until next time, stay well, get booked, and happy Halloween. This is Scotty out.